This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good friends, we are near the end of Sesshin. For a week now, we've lived like monks, more or less. For me, I took the opportunity to unplug, in capital letters. I turned off my phone, didn't bring a computer, forgot to bring a watch. It was nice to have the Han and bells tell time for me. I have reveled in this quiet, peaceful place with all of you, to slow it way down, to watch the wild turkeys and deer roam the grounds, to hike the well-worn paths every day and enjoy the vistas and trees and fresh air, to feel the warm heat of the sun the first 2 days and have the brisk autumn winds cool us down, to bow to Coben and Maya at their memorial place, only to find in the water pail next to their gravestone a small black mouse who died trying to climb out. To bow to the small black mouse, to notice the dim morning light turn to bright, then fade to the dark of night. To deeply practice Zazen, to engage in noble silence, to eat really, really good food. Before I go on, I would like to look back at the life of Koben Chino Otagawa Roshi, founder of this Compassion Light Temple, this place we call Jikoji. This is from Floating Zendo News, spring of 2016. Koben Chino always wanted to go to America. When he was invited to help with the establishment of Tassajara by Suzuki Roshi in 1967, Koben was engaged in special Sodo training, S-O-D-O, at Eheiji Monastery. He asked Koei Chino Roshi, his teacher, 3 times for permission to come, and each time was refused. Chino Roshi adopted Koben at age 14 with the expectation of him inheriting Chino Roshi's temple one day. Needless to state, Koben Chino came to America anyway. It takes a person with deep knowledge of Buddhist tradition to be able to transfer its essence to another culture. Born February 1st, 1938, into a family of priests in Niigata Prefecture, Koben grew up in his father's Soto Zen temple, Jokoji, in Kamo, Japan. His early childhood was influenced by war, financially hard times, and his father's death when Koben was 8 years old. He was ordained at age 12, later adopted and given Dharma transmission at the age of 28 by Chino Roshi. Koben received a master's degree in Mahayana Buddhism from Komazawa University in 1965. He certainly had not only a deep knowledge of Zen Buddhism, Koben also had a conviction that he wanted his students to become American Buddhists. There are binders of written notes at San Francisco Zen Center on how to perform ceremonies. San Francisco Zen Center students took these notes from instructions given by Koben in response to Suzuki Roshi's request to teach his students in his absence. One of the ironies is that though Kobin was an expert in tradition, he rarely taught his students traditional Soto Zen ceremonies beyond the most basic forms. Kobin's emphasis was just sit. In February 1970, Kobin Chino became the chief priest for Haiku Zendo in Los Altos. In fact, Kobin's airfare to America was paid by the Haiku Zendo Sangha. In 1979, Bodhi students, an outgrowth of Haiku Zendo, purchased the Old Pacific High School rural property along Skyline Boulevard for a retreat center for Kobin and his students. This property became Jikoji in 1983 and was officially registered as a temple of the Soto Zen School in 1984. Soon, Kobin Chino became known as a traveling teacher as he divided his time among the Jikoji, Hokoji in New Mexico, and Shambhala Sanghas in the United States and Europe. He later helped create new Zendos in Austria, Germany, and Switzerland. Kobin had a special relationship with Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche and Naropa University in Colorado. Kobin Chino was teaching frequently and acting as World Wisdom Chair at Naropa when he died July 29, 2002, in a drowning accident. His death occurred at the mountain home of his Dharma heir, Vanya Palmers, in Switzerland. Maya, Kobin's five-year-old daughter, disappeared from a dock where she was playing, and he tried to save her. They both died in the shallow, icy cold water. Kobin's and Maya's ashes are placed in the many places he taught, and his influence on American Buddhism will be everlasting. Angie Boisevain was undergoing transmission when Kobin died and was officially transmitted by Vanya Palmers in 2004. In the Floating Zendo News summer of 2002, remembering Kobin. Kobin Chino Roshi's accidental death in July has brought forth many occasions for his students to remember him. The Floating Zendo News dedicates this issue to Kobin's memory with some stories of his teaching. Angie remembers this story. Kobin was a Zen archery teacher and gave classes at Esalen sometimes. At one, the students finished their practice, trying and yet not trying to hit the small straw target. Kobin said, "Good, very good." Then picked up a bow, knocked an arrow, turned quickly away from the target, shot the arrow into the Pacific Ocean and yelled, "Bullseye!" She has also transcribed many of his talks from the early days of Haiku Zendo and Jikoji, including this excerpt on the Bodhisattva. Bodhisattva Mahasattva is the one who walks down, comes down. Bodhisattva is the one who endlessly grows, endlessly learns. The notion of bodhisattva comes from Mahayana Buddhism about the time Christ was born. About 500 years after Buddha, his teaching became very dense, very professional. There was a separation of bhikkhu and bhikkhuni, lay people. The Mahayana idea came from a lay women's group. They are the ones who address themselves as bodhisattva. And they built a stupa, not a temple or a place where bhikkhus gather as a monastery. They just built a symbol of Dharmakaya, the content of meditative realization itself. Joyce Siebert ordained with Koban at Haiku Zendo and brings this teaching, collected in Hoto, a newsletter of Haiku Zendo. Here, Koban speaks in his illimitable English about many things in a few words. The stage of purity go endlessly, and so-called nirvana comes very end of it. Nirvana is literally death. Perfect death is what nirvana is, and we accomplish it before this body reach to end. Still functioning remain, we reach to that end of purity. That's what we are doing. You may say you are going to Sesshin and sit. That's a big lie. If you say to your friend, partner, I'm going to die, no one can let you go to Sesshin. So you say, I'm going to sit. No wonder it is a difficult thing. So after tomorrow, we will go back to our lives, family, home, work, being traffic. The quietude of Sesshin can linger with you after you leave here for a few hours, a few days, a couple of weeks if you're lucky. I myself have tried to keep a hold of this Sesshin feeling, the slowness, the routine, the gentle peace. But our real life is out there waiting for us. How we proceed in our life, or what Angie calls this infinitely big field we call our life, is our responsibility. Our life and how we live it is up to us. So what do we do now? We have sit in Zazen for 6 days. And what? Go back to life as if nothing happened? So much has happened. I say, take Sesshin with you. Have you paid attention to your walking here, especially in the Zendo, trying not to make noise with your footsteps? I hope so. Walk softly. Walk with awareness in your everyday life, wherever you go. Be awake in every moment. Let's say you're going to the grocery store. You park the car, get out, and walk to the entrance thinking about your grocery list, all the errands you have to run. You can picture it. But instead, after you park your car, while walking to the entrance, think of each step. How much noise are you making? I make it a practice that whenever I walk, wherever I walk, I do my best to mind each step. This is the practice. This is the practice. Being awake to your actions what you say and how you say it, how you think. So this brings me to the Eightfold Noble Path. Right understanding, right thoughts, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. For a few years now, I've been working on especially one called right speech. I carry this little index card with me. I'll read it. It's basically in two parts. First part is the 6 points of mindful speech. Speak slowly. Enunciate clearly. Listen to yourself. Listen to others. Regard silence as a part of speech. Speak concisely. And on the other side, the 4 gates of speech. Is what I'm saying true? Is what I'm saying necessary? Is what I'm saying kind? Is it the right time? If you're about to say something that you are not 100% certain is true, don't say it. People respect genuine. They are magnetized by it. Will say, ask yourself, will saying this create hurt or harm? If it will only create destruction without any positive outcome, hold your tongue. If you believe it will be helpful to other people, say your piece. The final gate is all about timing. The other person may have something else going on that day, or I need to know the full picture of a situation before communicating it to another. Right speech. Again, from a floating Zendo news from summer of 2001. This is a talk from Angie Boisevain, or edited from a talk from Angie. Right speech, who we are and where we are. The first time I did Shosan ceremony with Koban in the early years, I had a really big question. By the end of a week of sitting, there's always some profound question that has arisen. I was petrified, absolutely petrified to go up and face the teacher that way. But I had to do it. So I got up there and did my prostration. And then I looked at him and I could not remember what my question was. It was gone. Sound familiar? After a long moment of just looking at Koban, I finally said, "Where did the words go?" He looked at me and said, "Right back where they came from." Just immediately like that. In the Eightfold Path that Buddha proposed to us for right understanding, right thinking, right speech, right effort, all those rights are the word samyak, which means unsurpassed, complete, perfect. Sounds like some very high, exalted, impossible to reach place, but actually it's just an aspect of awareness, awakeness. What Buddha was teaching over and over in every way was how to be and remain awake. That's what mindfulness training is all about. That's what Zazen is all about. It isn't to achieve some wonderful, exalted state of mind. It's to be completely present, to be completely who we are and where we are. Buddha's teaching about right speech was quite brief, actually. He said, abstention from lying, slander, abuse, and gossip. Just like that. Very simple, but very, very hard to keep. The Bodhidharma version of this teaching is, self-nature is mysterious and profound. In the realm of the amazing Dharma, not to preach a single word is not telling lies. These teachings are pointing to a difference between authentic speech and automatic or artificial speech. It's difficult to talk about authenticity, especially, but I think we all know it. One way of describing it is that it comes from the heart and the belly, as well as from the head. It isn't that we have to cut off the head and not think anymore, but that the thinking part is informed by the heart and the belly. With that kind of information, we are able to speak the truth. In order to have authentic speech, it's helpful to see all beings as if you're meeting them for the first time. See all beings anew. Drop the labels you have for them, especially the ones you love, and see them. Beginner's mind. If a person you know, or even a person you don't know, is mean or that the wise would reprove, they are suffering. How do we know this? It is the first noble truth. Everything in this life contains suffering. So show them, give them compassion. Regardless of the reaction or response, really see it and then give an appropriate response. Have a kind mind, a parental mind. In Dogen's instruction for the Zen cook, he says, kind mind is the mind or attitude of a parent. In the same way that a parent cares for an only child, keep the three treasures in your mind. A parent, irrespective of poverty or difficult circumstances, loves and raises a child with care. How deep is love like this? Only a parent can understand it. A parent protects the children from the cold and shades them from the hot sun with no concern for his or her own personal welfare. Only a person in whom this mind has arisen can understand it. And only one in whom this attitude has become second nature can fully realize it. This is the ultimate in being a parent. In this same manner, when you handle water, rice, or anything else, you must have the affectionate and caring concern of a parent raising a child. Let none by anger or hatred wish harm to another, even as a mother at the risk of her life watches over and protects her only child. So with the boundless mind, should one cherish all living things. All beings suffer. Be compassionate. As humans, we want to label everything. If the car in the next lane cut you off, You say, you effing a-hole. There, you've labeled it. Now you're angry. Or if your son forgot to put the clothes in the dryer yesterday, and now they smell like mildew. Lazy, rotten kid. Another label, another idea. Can you see that putting a label on people or events causes us to suffer? To not see that the person in the next lane may have their own troubles, or that your son had a big test today and was studying for it last night and forgot the laundry. Once we label, we judge. The label is just another idea, a fixed view. Drop it. Standing or walking, sitting or lying down, during all one's waking hours, practice the way with gratitude. Not holding to fixed views, endowed with insight. Don't add anything extra. Like in Zazen, just let the thoughts and emotions arise and dissipate. Nothing extra. And if you have a problem, bow to it. Bow to it. Don't label it. That's extra. Just work on the solution. And before I forget, going back to noble silence, that Sesshin, we are also asked to make as little sound as possible. With footsteps, with opening and closing doors, with pulling your chair out at mealtime, putting down your coffee cup. Again, from the instructions for the Zen cook, Dogen says, there is an old saying which goes, see the pot as your own head. See the water as your lifeblood. Clean the chopsticks, ladles, and all other utensils. Handle them with equal care and awareness, putting everything back where it naturally belongs. To handle them with equal care and awareness is very important. In other words, when you work with some tool or utensil, you should put it back when you are finished with it and not just leave it sitting around. When you put a pot down roughly, banging it around on concrete or a tiled sink, it cries out in pain. If you are still unable to hear that cry, then you can hardly be said to be a person living out Zazen in your daily life. Of course, this applies not only to utensils and things, it applies equally to situations and people. Bring your actions at Sesshin to your daily life. It's a gift you give yourself. This is the practice. Be awake to your actions, what you say, how you think. Be awake. And Koban says, the great pleasure, the great accomplishment of your way seeking is in the realization of sitting. This form of sitting, this place to sit on this earth, this time to sit, the 20th century, 21st century, all have lots of problems. The Shikantaza way is giving birth to the Buddha seed. It is not a person becoming a better person. It is the actualization of what we are. And lastly, a poem by Angie Boisevain. I still feel you. From my teacher, Kōben Roshi. You have become a murmuring in my wrists, high whine inside the collarbone, eerie familiar whisper whenever I wake and become an ear. Your low white words stalk slow as egrets up and down the dark knobs of my spine. Year after year, your insights burn into my knees and ribcage, sometimes flaming into sudden useful knowledge. Your constant presence still lives in me from inside out, like good food. Not yet.
Oh,
sorry. Are there any comments or questions?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
I just want to say I just read that poem by Angie. I've read it many times, but I just read it again last night. The one about Kōben. That's such a great expression of the bodily, spiritual evil that's still there. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Paula. Kove.
There's only one comment I want to make. It came to me during your talk. This for me was a talk from a spiritual teacher, not a Zen teacher. I shouldn't say that. Maybe that's heresy, but it wasn't a Zen talk. It was a parent talking to me lovingly and to my spirit.
Thank you, Kave. So I've been formulating the second talk for a couple of weeks, but I didn't start writing it down until Wednesday. And I had just written it down, the first half. I'd written it down. I kind of, you know, thought about how to do it. And last night, at about, I don't know what time it was, 2 or 3 in the morning, it finished up. Mm-hmm. I just grabbed my paper and pencil, and in the dark, I'm lying in bed, and I just start scribbling this second half of the talk. And it just came to me. But really, it's from my own life experience. It's what I've brought from the few sessions that I have been to here. And it's what I've learned. And I have a wish that everybody learns this way. That, you know, that we're just awake, that we're, you know, just living what we learn from here and from our zazen. So thank you. Yes, Rain.
I loved your talk. It's so heartfelt.
Thank you.
What you experienced being here at Jokoji in noble silence and being able to live like the monk and enjoy this lifestyle and the great food. What came to mind with your talk was about a parent and how they unconditionally love their children. And we give them a pass a lot. And I would say to my son sometimes, parents love their children more than children love their parents. And you're not going to figure this out until you are a parent.
Right.
And then when he finally turned 27 and he was out there on his own, and I'm like, you're not a trust fund. He thanked me. He thanked me for the lessons because I wasn't always rescuing him. I would let him figure it out, though it pained me, and I could see it coming. And I run a small crew, and sometimes I feel like I'm leading by example. So I have an empty wheelbarrow. And I'm going down through the landscape, and it's like, I can put this in my wheelbarrow. Yeah. So I always tell my team, never leave empty-handed, you know, and clean up as you go. It makes it so much easier, and then you're leaving it better for the next guy. So thank you just so much, because I don't read a lot of Dharma. My husband was a big scholar. And once I said, Rob doesn't read anything fun. You know, all he reads is Dharma. And I realized my audience, you know. And, but it just, you know, it was so, he was just, and I was just constantly learning. And I would always say, talk Dharma to me.
Talk Dharma to me. Wow.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your talk. I felt there was a clarity in your words, in your rhythm and cadence, which had this beauty to it. And I also felt that it had a gentle and kind type of strength. And I wanted to share two things, and then I had a request. And the two things from the talk that was very, very refreshing was, one of them was, you had this way in saying some of the things that we chant in the Zendo, such as the passage about practicing the way with gratitude. And we usually say it as a chant, and hearing it the way you said it with as if this is how it should be. And that was like very special. And then the part about where you pointed out that having a parental attitude towards everyone, and having that become second nature, that was also very, very beneficial for me. Thank you. And then I had a request. There was this very nice list that you had there was one about when you talk, there was like 3 or 4 things that you do. Mm-hmm. Is it right? Is it kind? Is it timely?
Sure.
And there was a list before that.
Yes.
If you could please say this.
Of course. We just find it, okay. Somewhere. the 6 points of mindful speech. Speak slowly. Enunciate clearly. Listen to yourself. Listen to others. Regard silence as a part of speech. Speak concisely. I carry it wherever I go. It reminds me. This talk makes me happy. There's so many things that, you know, when you're learning, you know, when you're sitting and then you experience things and then you get to share it with others. This is like one of the 10 precepts, right? Hmm. Not hoarding teachings.
Hey, Julie, you're shining.
I'm very, very happy. Sure. Anything else? Yes.
I was thinking that, or there was a saying, everyone who loves us is our parent. So I cheat you. It feels like this.
Thank you so much. Well, that's Dogen, you know, on parental mind. But, you know, the main point is to put what we learn into action. Right? These chants are not just chants. Right? There's something to actually do. I mean, this is the whole point of Zen. To learn this stuff and then live it in our life. Do you get it?
Took a while.
Yeah. So, you know, I know Pamela loves the Metta Sutta. Okay, at Floating Zendo, we call it Sutta. Here, they call it Sutra. I'm just going to, you know, make that little distinction. It's the same thing. Man, just copy it down and, like, live by that thing. Yes, Michael, you're welcome.
Yeah, I have another group I belong to. Just practice these principles, not your affairs. I mean, when you say go back to the real world, this, I've never understood that. I mean, you know, I know we go back to our lives.
Yeah.
But this is our lives. There's no distinction.
Right.
There should be, I mean, to me, there's no distinction between being here.
Home. That's right. But see, we make the distinction because we're human. We always want to separate things. That's what happens. Our minds just want to do it. Like they want to name something. You know. But really, there's no separation, is there? Isn't that what Ditch Zen teaches us? There's no separation.
One question.
Yes.
Why do you think Goben threw the arrow at the ocean and said bingo?
It's a great question.
You'd have to ask that group.
So, I think the answer kind of lies in what Ocean talked about the other day. And you weren't here. So he mentioned rivers flowing into the ocean. All, you know, there's no distinction. Rivers just flow into the ocean. And that's what we are. We're in the ocean. We're all a part of it. But I think the target is the ocean. All paths lead there. Just like all paths, the paths that leave Jokoji, they all lead to Jokoji. Right? It's just like that. It's the whole world. It's everything. That's what he meant by that. Do you think so, Paula?
I do, but you and I must have this, we do have this thing going. And yeah. I also read that last night.
Oh, this morning, I cannot believe you.
I know. I always thought, wow, that's just awesome. What a cool guy. And then I thought, you know, he was at Esalen. I mean, he could have hit someone with that arrow that was down on the beach.
He could have.
He did it. That's why he said bullseye.
I guess he had a really big field, right? So he just bullseye.
I'm sure he was on careful.
The ocean and I make it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Something. What you said is very beautiful. It's a different.
It's a different way, but who knows? It could be all of it or none of it.
Yeah. You never know. Yeah. Maybe we're just playing around.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.